You're listening to Mornings with Eric and Bridget. Mine is Bridget this morning. Jill is sitting in right here on Moody Radio 89.3.
Bigger is better. So says the fast food industry, concert venues, restaurant menus. Bigger is better, though, is not necessarily what our next guest is telling us. Carl Vaders, welcome to Moody Radio, South Florida.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Yeah. I've never used the term desizing until today. You're just making words up now, aren't you?
I think I actually did. I couldn't find it in a dictionary. So when you come up with a new idea, sometimes you got to make new terms for it. So as far as I know, I made up the term desizing.
So what's it mean?
Well, it's let me start by saying what it doesn't mean.
Okay.
First of all, it's not downsizing, and it's not even right sizing. But desizing, when in context of the book that I've written about the church, is I think we need to stop using size as the primary and sometimes the exclusive indicator of whether or not a church is healthy. We use attendance figures and an increase in attendance figures almost exclusively, and it's not the best way to gauge the health of a church.
Well, Carl Vaders should know he's been in pastoral experience for more than 40 years. So, Carl, if that's not something that we should be obsessed with, how is being obsessed with church growth something that you see as an issue?
I've been in pastoral ministry for over 40 years, as you said, and almost all of that in smaller churches. And I have noticed, especially in the last 5 to 10 years or so, we've had just far too many cases of pastoral moral failures and so on. And there are all kinds of reasons behind it. But I think one of the primary reasons behind it that has not been paid enough attention to is that we are chasing after size and bigness so obsessively that I'm convinced it is probably the major contributing but unacknowledged factor in pastoral burnout, in moral failure, in misallocation of funds, and a whole bunch of the other dysfunctions of the church. If we stopped chasing numbers, I think we would concentrate more on the things we ought to be concentrating on.
You know, I'm a baseball fan, and they say the best umpires are the ones you really don't know because they don't mess up too much. They're the ones who don't they're always making the right call, and they're kind of hidden by the fact that they're good at it. Is that kind of the same way as a pastor should be? They're known more for their church than their pastor, a healthy church?
Man, why didn't I talk to you before I wrote the book? That's a great analogy. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Or another analogy would be the sound and audio people at the back of the room in the church. The only time you notice they're there is when they mess up.
Right.
And so you want to be in a place where you're not being noticed. But we got these stages in churches, right? And my church has a stage too.
Right.
And we have mics and we have lights. And all of that calls attention to the person that everybody's staring at. So there's a real danger because of just the physicality of a lot of our churches. And it's one of the reasons why I celebrate small churches, because I think in small churches, there's far more opportunity for there to be a pastoral presence in the church lobby and spending time in conversation with people, and not just simply leading from the front and from a stage. So, yeah, I think one of the healthiest things for pastors is to get off the stage, to spend time with people, and to be engaged in the process of discipleship.
And yet we're supposed to be winning the lost. We're supposed to be discipling. Wouldn't that naturally allow for a church to grow?
That's a really great question, because it makes sense. What you just said is a logical thing that makes sense. So I hear this a lot, because I've been a small church proponent now for quite some time. And so that's the biggest question I get is, well, wait a minute, all the healthy things grow. And if we're leading people to Christ, the church will get bigger, right? If we were scientists, we would call that a hypothesis, right? That makes sense. But then what scientists do is they test the hypothesis to see if they can turn it into a working theory. And if you test the hypothesis that all healthy churches continue to get larger numerically, what you find out is that 90% of churches in the world are not consistently getting that larger numerically. 90% of churches in the world have been and always will be under 200 people, and yet the Church of Jesus continues to relentlessly grow. So the idea of more people in a particular congregation as a sign of health simply isn't matched up in experience the way the theory sounds like it should.
The church continues to grow, though, because it's not upon our shoulders. And I think that's part of the problem. We put it on our shoulders, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are two assignments here in the growth of the church. One, Jesus said, I will build my church. And then Jesus turned to us and said, and I want you to go make disciples. And we tend to hear that as, oh, okay, we'll go build the church. And I can see Jesus pausing and going, no. I'll build the church. You make disciples. And we go, got it. We'll go build the church. No. Right? I've got this conversation going on in my head, and I think we've gotten that backward far too often. And a lot of what we call church growth is really about us taking the responsibility from Jesus rather than taking the responsibility on that he gave us, which is to make disciples.
So, okay, define make disciples then for us. What's he actually calling us to do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that is the primary thing that he calls us to do. In Ephesians chapter 4, you get the fivefold ministry gifts, and it's actually the only place in the entire Bible where the word pastor is mentioned. And in that spot, the pastors, along with apostles, prophets, evangelists, and teachers, are given a single assignment, and that is to equip God's people for works of service. And that really, I think, is the heart of discipleship. We are not called just simply to teach people. You can have people get through classes and never be discipled because they're simply being taught. But when you're actually equipping God's people to care for each other, that's where discipleship takes place. And the essence of it is relationship. Jesus discipled the 12 because he was in relationship with the 12. He only taught the crowds because he couldn't be in relationship with 5,000 people at a time.
We're talking with Carl Vaders. He's written this book called Desizing the Church, How Church Growth Became a Science, Then an Obsession, and What's Next. And in your What's Next, you said that discipleship fixes everything. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, that was one of those title chapters that I put out there and thought that almost seems a bit abrupt. But the more I looked at it, the more I realized I really stand by it. Discipleship literally fixes everything. Imagine any church and any problem you can think a church might have, and I dare you to think of a problem in the church that discipleship won't fix, right? Lack of volunteers, discipleship will fix that. Lack of finances, discipleship fixes it. Disunity, immorality, immaturity, discipleship fixes all of those things. And in fact, actually, there's only one thing that discipleship won't fix, and that is discipleship will not fix the size of your church. And that's for two reasons. One, because the size of your church is not a problem to fix. And secondly, because there will be times that if we're going to choose discipleship, that there will be times where we have to make a decision. Do we make the numerical growth choice or do we make the discipleship choice? Most of the time, those two things will be in alignment, but there will be occasional times when choosing to go down the discipleship route will mean that you might actually lose people rather than gaining people. And we always need to decide for discipleship first, because that's what will keep a church healthy.
Discipleship will not help my ability to sneak out before the service is over, though. So that's one of I'm just joking. How can a pastor desize? This is a big question, I think, because can we go backwards, I guess, is the question. Because here we are. We are where we are. What do we do now?
Yeah, no, that's really important. In fact, I have a short 10-question quiz in the book that is entitled, Do I Need to Desize? And it's 10 simple questions that you answer from 0, no, I don't do this at all, to 5, yes, I do this all the time, that has to do with, Am I a person who maybe needs to desize and I don't even realize it? Like, for instance, do I give more credibility to a person with a bigger church than a person with a smaller church? Do I ever excuse moral failure because somebody is being numerically successful? Do I compare myself to other churches that are larger or smaller and feel better if I'm bigger or worse if I'm smaller? There's actually 10 questions. So it's something that's a very practical thing that you can actually get some gauge on and go, okay, I may be having a more of a problem with bigness than I realized. And once you realize, okay, I'm chasing bigness in an unhealthy way, then we need to get back to the biblical premises of it. We've got to make disciples, and we've got to be people of integrity. That's what matters more to getting the numbers up.
Yeah, this conversation is so helpful. Our family has experienced going from a large church to a smaller church in the last few years, and we've seen exactly what you're talking about. It is that one-on-one discipleship. It is that fact of knowing those in your congregation and being able to come alongside those who are struggling, and just a more natural growth discipleship instead of a here's a discipleship class. So I see so what you're saying in this, but there is this sense where there are some small churches that are small because there is not discipleship going on in that church. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It is not true that all small churches are healthy, and it is not true that big churches are unhealthy. There are some big churches out there that are exceptionally healthy that you can attend and you can get discipled in. Now, you may not get to know the pastor by name because there may be thousands of people in the church, but as long as you're being pastored by somebody, whether it's on a discipleship group or a small group or on a ministry team, as long as you're being discipled and you're being pastored by somebody, it doesn't matter that you're being discipled by the person who's speaking on a Sunday morning. Likewise, there are a lot of small churches that are unhealthy as well, and part of the reason they're not growing numerically or spiritually is because there can be all kinds of dysfunctions going on. So this obsession with size is just one of many problems that a church can have. The only reason I point it out is because I think it's been underappreciated as a problem in the church. But yeah, there's no question about it. There are a lot of churches that are small that are unhealthy. There are a lot of churches that are big that are very healthy. It's not about the size. It's about whether we're obsessed with numerical growth or whether we're really concentrating on discipleship.
Mm. Is one of the ways to de-size to get rid of all the clutter within the church and just boil it down to we're going to start helping families and serving them and helping singles and serving them and just get rid of, there's a lot of clutter, I guess, in a larger church many times. Yeah, I guess in smaller churches too. Just a lot of programs that are nice, but not necessary. Do you really have to start looking at making hard decisions and looking at things?
Oh, you are dead on there. That is one of my hobby horses that I'm constantly harping on when I spend my time talking to pastors. Clutter is one of the early signs of an unhealthy church, whatever size it might be. And I'm talking physical clutter. I'm talking scheduling clutter. I'm talking mission clutter. We're trying to do too many things too often. If you take a look at healthy churches, this is one of the factors. For instance, people say, if you're not going to look at numbers, what are some ways to determine whether a church is healthy? Well, there's one you just mentioned. A church that has a simplified mission, that has a simplified schedule, that knows what they're about, and that does one or two things exceptionally well, is much more likely to be healthy. A church that's trying to do all kinds of things in too many different ways and has mental, emotional, and physical and spiritual clutter, that is the sign of an unhealthy church, one of many signs of an unhealthy church.
You know, as you say that, I'm not going to ask the pastor what the mission of the church is. I'm going to go talk to a teenager in the youth group. If they know the answer to what the church's goals are, I think that would be a healthy church.
That's huge. I have a podcast that I call The Church Lobby. And the reason I call it The Church Lobby is I've discovered in my work with churches that you can discover more about the health of a church by walking through the lobby than by what comes from the platform. So what you're saying there is exactly true. You want to find out how healthy a church is. Don't sit down. Don't just watch what happens on stage. And don't just sit down with those who have the title of leaders, but walk through the lobby, have typical conversations with regular attenders, and that's where you're going to get a real understanding. If they have an understanding of what the mission of the church is about, that's a great sign that the church is pointing in the right direction.
Oh, that is so good. Carl Vaters, I think we could just keep talking about this. There's so much to talk about, but real quickly, address that person that maybe is realizing they might not be part of a healthy church.
Well, yeah, if you're not part of a healthy church, step number one is, are there avenues by which you can help the church get healthy? That is there an openness to that? Because there are some unhealthy churches where the pastor is working really hard to help the church get healthy, and the other leaders are working really hard, and it just isn't clicking, and there may be some hindrances in the way. But if you can step up and step alongside the pastor and the church leaders to help a church get healthier, that's step number one. If, however, you meet significant resistance to steps toward health from those who are in positional leadership, then you may have to find a congregation where the positional leadership is aiming towards health rather than hindering health.
Mm. Well, Carl, thank you. This has been eye-opening and very informative. It's been really good. Thank you for your time this morning.
I appreciate it. Thank you.